happy, happy little reggae, upbeat reggae flavor there, Cruz. He's talking about Cruz missiles, as in missiles with nuclear warheads that fly through the air, aerial torpedoes, as they were first called. Okay, now, synchronicity and breaking news. Let me see if I can find this breaking news bit. Hold on, I'm going to pause and find the email. During one of the breaks, email came floating in from Politico. And I laughed. It really seemed like the Onion. Politico, breaking news. Government report. UFOs are real. Really? UFOs are real. Here we go. A new intelligence report sent to Congress on Friday concludes that virtually all of the 144 sightings of unidentified flying objects documented by the military since 2004 are of unknown origin. In an extremely rare public accounting of the U.S. government's data on UFOs that is likely to fuel further speculation about phenomena the intelligence community has long struggled to understand. Asterisk. The report, the government's first unclassified assessment in half a century, does not offer any definitive answers on who or what may be operating a variety of aircraft that in some cases appear to defy known characteristics of aerodynamics, and that officials believe pose a threat to national security. The Pentagon, assisted by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, found no evidence to indicate they mark a technological breakthrough by a foreign adversary, or that, meaning like Iran or Cuba, or Russia, or that the objects are of an extraterrestrial origin. I'll read that again. Okay. The Pentagon, issued by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, found no evidence to indicate that they, these 144 sightings, mark a technological breakthrough by a foreign adversary or that the objects are of an extraterrestrial origin, though neither explanation has been ruled out in what officials have described as a preliminary assessment. Quote, of the 144 data points, we have no clear indication that there is any non-terrestrial explanation for them. But we will go wherever the data takes us on this, close quote, a senior U.S. government official said. Well, there's a lot in there. So they don't believe it's by a foreign power. That is to say, you know, China. No evidence of that. But it's not really extra. They don't really have any evidence that it's extraterrestrial either. Well, what the hell would that be? The ship having a marking from the Andromeda Galaxy? Oh, come on. Little green men? Furthermore, a few more furthermore points here. By the way, kudos to Spencer Stevens, co-editor of COVID-19 News and sometimes associate producer of this program, said he believed that the COVID drama would end in UFO kind of invasion. Now, the previous song was called Cruz, about cruise missiles. Now, there's a guy in American history named Wernher von Braun who was basically a colonel in the SS and among the spoils of war won by the United States government when Nazi Germany was defeated in 1945 were a whole bunch of rocket scientists, literally rocket scientists, the leader of whom was Wernher von Braun. I have heard a special operation. Tell me if I'm right. Special operation with something involving like 1,000 people to get just him out of the country, and then he comes to the United States with wife, maybe family, and becomes the head of two programs: the Intercontinental Ballistic Missile and the Apollo program. Designs the Saturn V rocket that we are told brought Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin to the moon in 1969. And it is, let's say, As well as it can be known, it is known that he gave several warnings very late in life to a close assistant who published them, one of which was, beware, when there is a alien invasion, it will be a false flag incident. You're thinking, why an alien invasion, false flag incident? It's because people in power want power. They're not like you. You know, you may want to, like, clean a closet or get a second home or something like that. No, people in power want power, and when you start to want power, more and more of it, it becomes a total obsession. And we've just been through an exercise in fascism, in tyranny, full on, out front, and we have reason to be cautious that there may be more coming. So Cruz, these incidents. Now, okay. So my contact on this, and the reason why I haven't pondered it and gotten into ufology is, let's say one of the closest women to me in the history of my entire life, potentially the only person I would have married. I'll leave her and her professor's name out of this. Her professor was a captain in the Air Force during the Korean War, and told her, and he had all the right security clearance, and his job was to guard the UFO files at night when nobody was in the office, and he read the entire file cabinet. Don't know where this was. And he said, quote, as was quoted to me, I found out a lot of interesting things, but the most interesting thing I found out was that the Roswell incident actually happened, that bodies and the craft were recovered and, in fact, brought to Hangar 18 in Ohio. According to this person, it is all true. This was, years and years later. Bill Clinton has famously said in an interview that the intelligence community dodged all of his requests for the files. Clinton actually asked for the files. He said this. This is if you believe him. And he said that they wouldn't turn them over. And he said, I assure you, I wasn't the first public official that career professional, elected official that career professionals just waited out. All they had to do was stall him for the rest of his term, and he no longer had the ability to do that. So Bill Clinton said that President Clinton couldn't get the information he required, and he has the sole power to declassify anything he wants and give security clearance to anyone he wants. Commander in Chief. All right, so that's your breaking news update. Now for a little bit of Tantra Studio. So I was of a couple of minds of what to talk about tonight, and I have a whole page of notes comparing COVID to the Me Too movement, but it's a drag. It's sad. I gave a couple of ideas a moment ago, and I think that may be enough for now, and at some point I will develop this, but they seem to be the same type of psychological operation, both founded in a good cause. So, right, ostensibly, right? Stopping abuse and healing, preventing a virus. All right, so let's skip that. The other thought I've been walking around with all week, and it focused the other day after I went from getting waxed at the local joint, and then, which I do because I like it, and then went next door to the pickle shop, this fermented pickle shop in uptown Kingston, and had the most awesome conversation with the pickle woman. And she lost all of her friends because all of, like, the solid circle of women who stuck together through thick and thin for years, because she and one of her friends were asking too many questions and pissed off all these people who just wanted to light incense and place them at the feet of Anthony Fauci and then genuflect to science. And they continued looking into things, and I found her to be very well versed in the issues. very pleasant person to talk to. And one of the conversations we had involved the birth control pill and how I've encouraged many of the women in my life to not take synthetic hormone pregnancy prevention, because it just not the whole idea of suppressing ovulation makes me just cringe. It's like I'd rather chew on aluminum foil than even think about suppression of ovulation by hormonal means and getting in and these subtle like molecular level interactions that the various glands in the body have signaling when it's time for that, when it's time for that, this situation of total balance. And in my experience, the female body is one of the most elegant expressions of nature that I can imagine, one of the most pleasant. And so I, you know, after like an hour of having this COVID birth control conversation, went bouncing down the street, down my merry way, back to my desk here, and thought, there's got to be like, all right, so we need those among us who are not terrified of their bodies and terrified of nature, maybe it's time to get together and start to have the conversation about where we're going to take our social and cultural concept of sex for real, not just in high theory lectures, but what are we going to do as a community and a culture together? How are we going to do this? What now are our ideas and boundaries, and how do we share and express those things? And this seems easy in a way. I mean, it's you know, a lot of things seem easy. But it seems easy, and yet it's not really. And that's because there is so much tension, so much anxiety around this universe of sexuality, and it has been so thoroughly politicized, where anyone who expresses anything human can be accused of being a certifiably bad person who must in some way be erased from the culture or from the face of the earth. And this is a very difficult environment in which to communicate and have a conversation. And that is the design. You may remember the conversation with Tom DiFerdinando. That deserves a replay. Talking about the emotional plague. And one of the things that COVID has in common with the Me Too movement is that they are both expressions of what Wilhelm Reich called the emotional plague. It's not that stopping sexual harassment is bad or that stopping the virus, if you believe in viruses, are bad. It is how it is done to the complete domination of all feeling and experience and the complete redefinition of and shutting down anything that meekly hints it might be alive. And perhaps you need to read more if you don't agree with this or you think I'm crazy, but you know, the way that I said it in my now somewhat infamous article called Take a Step Back, which was my in Feb of 18, basically my kind of sociological critique and feminist critique of the Me Too movement. I said, you know, scandal is never healing and it's never life affirming. So the way to healing, the way to making this better, to making this problem we have, society seems to have, better, can't involve scandal. That's just pure poison. But it would seem that's the only thing available politically, since you can't have a teach-in about sex, and the whole concept of consent was completely eviscerated by the idea that, well, any woman can change her mind at any time. Done. Well, that means that that really means that any and all sex is potentially rape. And I've thought about this one a lot, that someone who needs, first of all, I don't believe that consent is the way to do any of this. We need desire and love and attraction, curiosity, and a sense of offering oneself. Offering oneself to sexual experience and the sexual experience of others as a gift and as a celebration. And when you talk about consent, you're in a legalistic model that's gotten contractual. The actual eroticism has nothing to do with this kind of contractual thing that's been run up the flagpole as the only option. And what a consent model does is it politicizes every social and sexual interaction. And now, how do we depoliticize it? So this is what I consider to be my mission around sexuality at the moment, is focusing an idea of eroticism that is not politicized, that is, or said another way, that is based in nature and friendship and love and trust and sharing willingly because you want to. It's not about, I give you consent to suck my penis. It's like, how about if you're into it, and I like you, I'm into it. Okay, it's that easy. I don't need to sign anything. So then we get into the psychic state of society. And to reach that state of mind and of feeling and of body, where one is open and offering freely and happily, is completely antithetical to the prevailing state of mind of society, including several things, one of which is the digital, this hotly or coldly polarized binary digital environment that we are in, which has completely warped our personalities and our sense of self and made it impossible to say, this is, not impossible for everyone, but for many people, this is what I want. Let's go. Look, I'm ready. I want to try this. Let's do this again, whatever it might be. Because that's not part of that, of the milieu of what can get just thrust onto the internet in a second. And this is always the fear lurking, is that if anything goes wrong, it's suddenly going to explode onto the internet, and then someone's not going to have a job, and they're going to be shamed out of existence and a career for something that happened yesterday or that happened 22 years earlier. This is not an environment where any trust whatsoever is possible. To have trust, we need to go to a different environment, like, for example, sit out in the woods and light a campfire and hang out. Somebody plays guitar and we talk in the forest at night, fire going. That's how we really feel. That's one possibility. I have done a lot of digital art with sexuality. Analog photography back in the day, Neil McDonough, my bro, truly my Eagle Scout cousin, and I started a photo project on medium format cameras called Luscious Photo. Neil's got, he's a Taurus. Who else would you go to start a photo project with medium format black and white cameras than a Taurus? Okay, so then digital came along, and in Paris I discovered the wow fun of digital photography, and for years did the Book of Blue project. So I've done a lot of work with digital art, but real models, real people with real friendships evolving over years of women I considered my creative wife. I had several of those at Book of Blue, where the photos went on for 5 or 10 years, and it was just this beautiful relationship between the artist and the model. I tapped into this time-honored tradition. It is the muse tradition, but it's based on trust. It's based on appreciation and understanding. And vulnerability. And our milieu right now is so antithetical to vulnerability that to feel vulnerable for many people must feel like giving up complete control, and they're going to shit in their pants and piss in their pants and explode and die if they actually allow themselves to feel vulnerable. And there are many well-meaning people who are peace-loving who would want to explore past their existing boundaries, somewhat tight, somewhat not tight, but generally people have very tight boundaries such that the vulnerability required to open up a little bit enough to allow in an experience is terrifying because it implies losing control. And in our digital environment, the thing that it's all about is control. Over us, we can see this, everything from the Empire Pass and the Covey Pass, the Excelsior Pass, and contact tracing apps, and the computer test and tracking, and the vaccine database, and this is control, 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 control. It would be completely impossible without digital realm. Even Hitler used IBM computers in concentration camps. One of the first applications of computers was in the concentration camps to keep track of victims. So right in the inherent concept, encryption, Turing, the inventor of the computer, cracked the Nazi code using a computer because it would have taken like 50 years for mathematicians to come up with it. And so he invented a machine that could do it and was, by the way, gay and was convicted by a court of being gay and chemically castrated, meaning poisoned with hormone poisons against his will and committed suicide. The inventor of the computer, Turing, used to be called the Turing machine, T-U-R-I-N-G. So there is a legacy of control and of being anti- like life, love, and freedom associated with the computer, and now we live in them, are surrounded by them. I am staring at one now. My voice is being picked up by some magnets in this RA20 microphone and being turned into a digital signal. We are all living in the middle of this. And to be any more sexually free requires vulnerability. And it requires creativity, and it requires the willingness to experiment. And in there has to be the willingness to forgive minor transgressions, particularly if there's really no harm, no foul, and there's really no intent to harm. There's always going to be transgressions in sexuality. Some will hurt you. Sometimes you will hurt someone. But it does not mean that it should end in a courtroom drama or somebody being dragged through the Twitter sphere as an evil person because something went wrong. Things go wrong. And things can go very, very right. And so there, among the things that we need is sense of vulnerability and curiosity and the willing to let go of control and the conscious, agreed willingness to be forgiving and to not construe accidents or mere mishaps or miscommunications as intentional harmful acts. And this is where we might start to have some ability to form a basis in trust, to have some idea of what it would mean to trust another person. And it's people have a lot of power right now, and anyone, particularly female, can essentially ruin any male. And this, I don't think this is fair or right or valid or true in any sense of the word. This is pure gender bias. But women have the power to simply destroy men or come very close to it by making one statement. Now, people are getting deplatform for having made one statement that was not about a male-female interaction. Who's the Victoria's Secret, the new style Victoria's Secret model who made some comment about how, like, basically complimenting someone because their eyes looked Asian, and now, this is years ago, and now there's a movement to deplatform her? When do we decide that, like, okay, this is not worth the discussion, but I'll tell you when it is worth the discussion. It's worth the discussion if the interest is the emotional plague, which means the dead eating the living, the dead killing the living, the robotized, brainwashed, self-hating, guilt-ridden people wanting to attack anything that is capable of showing feeling, sensitivity, and love. That's the emotional plague. And so many things play into that form of attack of essentially the dead against the living, the soul, mental, emotional dead against the living. And if you use this analysis and not a political analysis, the politics makes much more sense. And why it is that we have all of these political centers around sex and gender, but there are no pleasure centers. Well, there's a couple. There's some clubs here and there. And the one that I used to go to called Decadence in New York City was closed down by a fake Me Too. Somebody Me Too'd the club, Kat Orme, who you heard on this program, to the landlord in a completely false statement, and the club was thrown out of its space. Had no basis in reality. It was purely based in jealousy. And so we have to acknowledge that this power exists and that there's trust required on the level of a bunch of people in a shooting range who know that none of them are there to harm another person. We all agree we're going to be trustworthy with these powerful weapons and just aim for the target and handle the weapons properly. Well, now we're in an environment where sexuality is fully weaponized. Once sexuality is fully weaponized, how then do you relax a little bit? How then do you experience any vulnerability and trust when you know that someone can just turn on you? Someone I know personally was Me Too'd by someone he knew and was friends with for 10 years after some claimed incident 10 years ago. Before they were friends, there was a blowjob, and then they became close friends for 10 years, and then she said she felt coerced into giving the blowjob. But what about the 10 years that you were friends? Like, doesn't that kind of say, okay, maybe, you know, I liked it or I didn't like it, but I felt strongly enough to be friends with the person, this is a close friendship. 10 years, this guy, Reed About Sex. I knew him from the polyamory scene. Reed Mahalo, I think his name is. So there has to be that agreement that I'm not here to harm you, and that if there is some mishap, we will have our way of addressing it. So that has to be there if people feel insecure. There has to be a way, but we're a long way from there. We're at the stage where individuals need to confront their own problems, and it is sad that there is not much in the way of space to do that. I am willing to hold space for which I do with my astrology clients, but for those who want to and other kind of consulting clients. But if anyone wants to help co-create a space, whether online or physical, where we can address our problems and begin to resolve and let go of them, that's actually the first step. And part of this whole game is there are very few of these places. I was very involved in the therapy movement in Seattle, training in Hakomi therapy, which refused to acknowledge sexuality in the training. There was not the least bit of training around how to conduct a sexual conversation. And when I investigated deeper, it turns out that, well, if that's part of therapy, then the therapist at any time can be accused of abuse, even for welcoming the conversation. And so it has been, politicized out of existence to even have a place to have a safe conversation. And the whole thing has got to be clandestine. That is not a place where sexual healing can happen. We're talking about backroom abortions. We're talking about this kind of terror of being exposed and found out. There has to be a better way, and there of course are better ways to do this, but it requires the commitment of every person not to harm other people, and to not politicize things. That have no business being politicized. They need to be resolved in therapy, or in a conversation, or in a sharing session of some kind. And there's plenty of people qualified to hold space for this, including people with some sex training. I don't really know too many. I know a few. You're about to hear from someone who has spent a lot of time in these spaces with me over the years, and was present at the last Betty Dodson workshop ever in 2019. And one of my modes of both sexual creation and sexual healing is to use sound, and to use sound feedback, and to encourage people, which I've done for many years, to listen to your own sexual sounds and hang out with them and love them, love yourself, love the experience. And so I have, one of the things, if you've ever stumbled upon or been, you know, gotten password to any contemporary version of Book of Blue with a lot of audio, is I make audio montages. And, well, it's montage because it's all audio. Sometimes I use music and sometimes only voices, and do this layering thing that is great fun. And to me, the healing quality of this is simply in how absolutely hot it is. Now, this is a matter of opinion, but I don't know. You're welcome to share your feedback. This is a good one for EFC@bookofblue.com. It'll go into that particular folder. And I would invite you to listen and experience this, and also to experiment yourself and notice if you're thinking, wow, I'm recording this on my phone. Someone might hear it. Oh, that's interesting. Well, what about that? All right, so someone's about to hear this, including me, and then we will exit with two more pieces. One is On the Turning Away live by David, and then followed by a piece called Absolutely Curtains from 1987. And now I leave you in the hands and the mind of Cheryl.
Two, because massage my hand. Two, massage my kind of rest,
stimulating
while I'm kind
G
of
G spot or G area.
Stimulating.
It's kind of like a
G spot or G area. It's kind of like a
lens
pouch, like a
and it's big
lens. Big in there.
I would be happy.
I would be happy
to welcome a penis.
I would be happy
into
welcome a penis.
Juicy wet cave.
Into this juicy wet cave.
Oh.
Or just grabbing.
Against the bone. Like a fish in the
pulling against the bone.
And then my palm.
Like a fish in the bone.
My clit.
And then my palm. My clit.
If I run my nipples now.
If I run my nipples now.
And I can imagine.
And I can imagine.
I can imagine. That.
I can imagine.
Ejaculation.
That.
First.
Male ejaculation.
I can feel that. First.
First.
I'm going to wait.
I can feel that. First.
After. That ejaculation.
After.
Just feels moved. I will.
turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand. Don't accept that what's happening is just a case of other suffering. Oh, you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting its shroud over all we have known. Unaware how the ranks have grown, driven on by a heart of stone, we could find that we're all alone in the dream of the plow. On the wings of the night, stirring where the speechless unite in a silent accord, using words you will find the strange mesmerized as they light the flame. Feel the new wind of change on the wings of
we'll be right back. Clean it out.